goal of this podcast is to help you break in and thrive in advertising. We do that every single week by sharing the stories and advice of those rocking it on the other side. This week, we talk about quality meats. Gordy Sang and Brian Seedband are on the show this week. They're co-founders and co-CCOs of Quality Meats. They're an independent creative agency recently named Adweek's Breakthrough Agency of the Year finalist and Ad Age's Small Agency of the Year for the last 2 years. They started Quality Meats along with production vet Casey Hart in the summer of 2020 with no paying clients or investors. Just a few humans focused on delivering the highest quality work without all the BS that gets in the way. Kind of like going to that one butcher you really trust, but all their meats are merely metaphorical, advertising styled. Today, they're fully integrated with that exact same mission, but with lots more humans in client roster, including Huggies, Regal Cinemas, DoorDash, Saks Underwear, Marquee Sports Network, the City of Chicago, PixArt, and probably more since I recorded this. The duo, Gordy and Brian, they're hilarious. You could tell they have good chemistry. They teamed up first time in 2008 in advertising, and they stuck together ever since. They've moved from Chicago to LA and now back to Chicago. They've worked on Netflix, Taco Bell, McDonald's, PlayStation, Miller Lite, and much more. And along the way, they've won some Cannes Lions, won shows, Clio's, AICP, yada, yada, yada. I brushed that off, but that's so impressive. Like, let's not get that mixed up. And separately, they've created a total of 5 female children between them. I think they're most proud of that. And today they talk about the journey, growth, and their advice tailored just for you. You're going to want to connect with them. If you listen to the end, they talk about it. Actually, they talk about how there's a special way you can connect with them. But in the meantime, you can go to qualitymeatscreative.com. That's www.qualitymeatscreative.com. Or hit me up on LinkedIn. If you leave a review on the show on Apple Podcasts, 5 stars, I'll be happy to introduce you with these guys or anybody else on the show. Now, on with the show. This is the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. And as usual, I'm your accomplice, Gino Schellenberger. Kick it, Mikey. All right. Brian Seedband and Gordy Sang. Hello. Welcome to two guests this episode on the Breaking and Entering Advertising Podcast. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Gino?
I'm great. Gordy, are you doing well?
I am also doing well. Thank you for asking.
Founders of Quality Meats. Creative, correct?
We like to keep the creative off of it. It's technically the LLC is there, but like we like to shorthand it.
Quality Meats. So what do you sell there, Gordy?
Not literal meats, metaphorical ones, advertising styled, ones. Yeah, getting straight to it. I guess the name, emits the idea of eliminating the fat, cutting the unnecessary layers from your traditional agency and getting straight to the core of the good things. We're like a butcher you can trust who can deliver set good things.
Makes sense to me. Brian, is this true? Did he get it right?
He did. Yeah. I mean, sometimes people want a little bit of, so we can,
yeah,
it's the right amount of fat. And then, the name to us embodies just kind of like our Midwestern kind of roots and personality in terms of like shooting straight, telling it like it is, rolling up our sleeves, getting the job done. Doing what it takes to get to the best possible thing. And kind of, yeah, that kind of hardworking mentality that we have.
If you're going to make a burger, what fat percentage do you recommend though? What's the ratio on that?
Like if you're a, yeah, it's gotta be, I mean, we're like 85%. Is that too lean?
That's Brian. What do you think?
I'm not good with the percentage specifically on the fat, but I think
80, 20, 75, 25, that's pretty fatty.
Yeah, I feel like the 85 is the right 80, 85, I'd go. I'm open to an 80, like a nice juicy, I would imagine like a Kuma's, whatever they do is right for me.
I heard they scream in the burger before they serve it at Kuma's Corner.
They did add taste.
As long as there's no spit.
No, of course not. Well, I think you guys, from what I've seen and heard and scanned through the ad trades, you guys have had a meteoric rise. I believe you guys have an Ad Age small agency of the year somewhere on your site. Is that true?
Yeah. Two of them, technically.
Not two on the site, just two.
Two small agency of the year awards. So the first one, I guess, was 2 years ago, 2022. And it was, we were in the 1 to 10 size category, and one silver was the specific prize in that one. And this past year, it was the Midwest region gold.
There we go.
Not totally sure which one was better, but
I think just having that, like whatever, I think just putting that in the site will help the aspiring advertisers with that. That's something they look for. They probably don't even know what that means. They're like, oh, that sounds great. But
totally. It's a bad.
Yeah. But I want to uncover about you two, your history, how you guys broke into this industry, how you created this amazing agency, and where the vision is, the work that you guys have done. You guys can interview each other. I can leave the room, whatever you think. But really, we want to make sure that aspiring advertisers are learning some lessons and learning about you all and why it's a great shop to work for if they want to go to Chicago, hang out with us in the Windy City.
They don't even have to be in Chicago. We're a completely virtual remote agency. We have no walls or a roof.
Yeah.
We were born in the pandemic. So we're completely virtual. So all of our employees are all over the country.
Okay. So, I saw Austin on the site too.
Austin, our
folks,
some Jersey people,
Do you feel like creatives in different cities have different vibes and offer different perspectives? Is that intentional or is that all a myth? Just good ideas from human insights spanning across all life forms.
It's a good question. I mean, our intention was really like, first of all, we don't need an office. It just doesn't see it. If in general, if like there's anything we can eliminate, simplify, deconstruct, we're going to do it. So there was no need to have a physical office, but in general,
that was extra fat. You were saying you were cutting out the extra fat.
This is to us was extra fat because we're comfortable with remote. But I think the idea of just like opening up the talent pool and being able to find the best talent, no matter where they are. Maybe there's a little bit of like a different tone or attitude based on the shops that they've, you know, people have been at or the specific vibe of the city a little bit. And we want diversity in thought and diversity in everything as much as possible, but not being bound to a single market. It just opens everything up in terms of like where the best talent, how we can, you know, bring the best talent to be a part of our team.
And Brian, while you're on, can you explain to me Gordy's role in the agency and what he does really well at the shop, or maybe not so well?
Yeah. I mean, so Gordy is the co-founder and co-CCO along with me. We're like kind of just weird Siamese twin people who weirdly share a brain and share screens constantly.
You're both in Chicago, so that makes it probably easier to meet up and get stuff done.
I'm moving to Denver in February.
Got it.
But yeah, it doesn't hurt. When we first went freelance, we were in person meeting up at the Capital One Cafe.
Capital One Cafe. Which one? Southport?
Southport. Yeah.
We're at that. That was basically our office. And then pandemic hit And then we just started doing this. And now it just feels like, why waste the 40 minutes? Because he's in Wilmette, I'm in the city.
Right.
Why waste the 40 minutes of commute and whatever when we could just do this virtually?
And I cut, Brian, I cut you off. I apologize.
Yeah, that's okay.
40, yeah.
Yeah, but like, just, but it was, at the time it was a change because our whole careers, we've been live and present with each other. And then, but we made that shift when we were freelancing pretty seamlessly into, and pandemic wise into like, oh, I just work right off of my bedroom and he can work there and we can virtually feel like, you know, we're with each other basically. And then in general, yeah, Gordy is, he's a very aggressive person, which has been great for the business. He has no shame in terms of like reaching out to people we met 17 years ago and haven't talked to since then. And just with running an agency, it's all about just kind of the hustle and planting as many seeds as we can constantly. So Gordy's really good.
You both do business development as well, account and new business, but you're fundamentally creatives.
Yeah. I mean, we both had to been thrust in a position to having to learn to do everything, basically. But I would say what he's particularly good at is constantly throwing things out there and pushing things
being creative ideas.
Opening up doors for us as a company in different ways, whether it's new clients, whether it's finding talent, pushing ideas, everything. He's very good at that.
All right, Gordy, do you agree with that?
Thank you. That's nice to hear from him. Like, you know, let's say, yeah, but
does he mean this?
I pathetically, like my free time is pathetically devoted to like, how can I better this situation that we've built? So like my brain instantly goes to like, what can I creatively problem solve for our company and keep wheels in motion, whether that be new business, whether that be finding new talent, whether that be pushing forward and a creative idea that's on the table. I'm, I guess, a squeaky wheel in that sense, trying to always push things forward. And sometimes it annoys people, but we try to find the people.
Find balance.
Yeah. And it's finding the right people, and I, you know, like, I do it, I hope, in a self-deprecating way where it's like, I'm sorry, I'm annoying, but like, it's all for the best reasons. It's all to help the person's business and help other, you know, like help the business forward for whatever client that we're working with.
Got it. And what is Brian, Brian's key skill set here? What does he bring to the table?
Brian, yeah, he's pretty solid. You know,
he's all right.
Yeah. I mean, he, you know, like where I'm the aggressive one, he can be the sometimes like, let's slow down and like think this through a little bit further, you know, like let's beat this up a bit more. And like, you know, maybe sometimes I'm more of the machine gun. He can do a bit more of the sniper kind of situation.
Yeah.
So it's a yin and a yang in that sense. And that helps us get to like, what's the middle between those two, and it's like it always ends up being in a pretty good slot.
I feel like the middle that we get to is always better than all on one end, you know. Right. That's one thing I guess I've learned in terms of like our partnership together. Like, we always end up in a better place because of the two things that we both contributed.
Who can talk about current clients pretty well right now? I want to know current clients, recent work.
Yeah, I mean, so we originated as more of a project-based agency, but, you know, like some of...
Which is how the industry's working towards, totally. Like, where it's shifting towards. Is
these, yeah.
AOR, you know, we've seen those articles, right? Like, AOR is dead. I don't necessarily agree with that. There's some big shops that are still maintaining AOR status. But yeah, I think project-based is probably the new business, right? To get those further AOR-like clients.
Yeah, but my metaphor that I continue to belabor is that like there's the cable and satellite providers, which are AORs, and then you have your high power, your streaming networks, you could have your traditional, I have Comcast and I have Netflix and Hulu and all that. We could live alongside that, or you can cut the cord completely and go all, you know, streaming networks, and pick like a select group of high powered streaming networks. And I think we all bring to.
You should write a byline about that.
Yeah, maybe.
I
like it, but in a way, we all more in the streaming network format, and some people subscribe to it. Now I'm gonna keep going with it, but I think we start with we do the $7.99, 30 days for free trial or whatever before you have to pay. I'm going way too deep into this.
But
the best way we've worked with clients is us hey, give us an opportunity for work. Let us prove our worth, you know, creatively and process wise, and establish a relationship and kind of punch above our weight and show
you get more opportunities and they buy into it more. So who have you done that with? What are some successful case studies of that?
Recently,
we've really done it with most of our clients. It's for the most part, they've all started out that way and have led to kind of that repeat either project stuff or kind of blossomed into more of like an AOR or retainer type situation.
Right.
Marquee Sports Network, who's one of the first pitches we did early on.
Which has exclusive airing of the Cubs, correct?
Right. The Cubs Regional Sports Network.
Regional Sports Network. And you did what was the campaign you got? You showed somebody crying. Is that correct?
That was our PlayStation commercial from 2012.
Oh,
where that was which was a good one. That was portrayed, showed the Cubs winning within a video game before they had actually won the World Series. And the guy who was playing had a single tear at the end of it.
And that was 2012, you said?
That was 2012.
Yeah, that one was like bringing to life the city of Chicago with the Cubs winning the World Series. Like what that, which at the time was, and I'm a Cub fan. So to me, that was like really emotional, special fantasy kind of like to bring to life, you know?
Well, thanks to me, I hate the Cubs with a violent passion. I'm a White Sox. I'm a White Sox fan. To me, it was like, ha ha, you losers can only win in a video game, and this is never going to happen. But it had about the film, I think, that resonated with a lot of people in the city and beyond, is that it had that kind of dual side, both sides of the coin.
That's the tension. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But
the Marquee Network, what'd you guys do with them?
So their second year in existence. Their first year was kind of like a fart in the wind, I guess, because it was the pandemic, the COVID season, shortened season. They didn't really get a chance to kind of announce who they were, and
I kind of like
their situation was that they were kind of foisted on Cub fans as like this new Cubs owned entity, and at the time, I think the fan sentiment wasn't great around that. You know, just like Chicago being a WGN town, you know, and WGN being the home of the Cubs for like 75 years or whatever. So to go to this like new kind of New York-ish, New York owned at the time, like kind of outsider-y thing. Fans thought it was kind of like a representative of kind of the Disneyfication of what was going on around Wrigley a bit, the personification of that.
Yeah.
So our task, I guess, at the time was like develop a campaign or an idea platform that kind of proves how Marquee Sports Network is like proves their colors, that they get it, that they understand what it means to be a Cub fan, embracing like the ups and downs, the roller coaster. Because it should be a Cub fan dream, you know, 24-hour network, whatever, devoted to Cub programming year round. With old Cub players.
Gordy sounds like that's a nightmare.
That's Gordy. So we developed a campaign. We get all of it. It was a campaign. And I think what was nice about it was like it did acknowledge the heartache, whereas like most sports network stuff is like very like go team, rah-rah positive. Like,
right.
It acknowledged kind of the pain of being a Cubs fan a bit.
As a CMO, you get kind of nervous. You're like, oh, maybe we should just talk about only the good stuff and how great it is to be a Cub fan. But there's power in acknowledging, conceding, and showing the journey along the way to get to be great.
Right. And I think that's why people want to watch it too, you know, yeah, because of all of that emotion that's attached to it, you know?
For tell that story, it's a long story of losing.
And yeah, and the
ultimate
redemption. So like, that's where the suite wouldn't have been as sweet without all the pain, you know what I mean? So we had to make sure that that came through and that they weren't allergic to showing that.
When you guys first came on my radar was, I think it was Ad Age or it was Tim Nudd. I'm not sure who covered it at the time. It was for Regal, the FOMO spot. Maybe it was a campaign. Was that with the zombies or the ghost or that weird witch lady?
What is she? She's like a
poltergeisty.
Right.
A swimming girl kind of thing.
Ghoulish girl, yeah.
By the pool, right?
Right. Yes. So we did a campaign for Regal Cinemas, shot with Andy Richter, who's the director, in Naperville, which is weirdly he resided there. He's from there, but anywho. That was a fun campaign, just to kind of a little bit like our whole positioning that. There with them is like to kind of like, you know, we love movie theaters and going to the movies and watching a movie, and we ruin them now by watching them streaming at home. You know what I mean? Like, I'm half watching on social media and I have a DoorDash guy come into my door and I'm just distracted. Being in the theater is like is the best way to watch it. So kind of shaking, making people think about that and question why they would just wait to watch it at home versus going to see it in the theater,
which is like, right. I think a different approach than the other theaters where they're talking about like how great the experience is in the theater. It's like, if you've been to a theater, you know that, right? You know, the sound and the popcorn and the chairs and all that, but like jarring people into thinking about what they're missing when they're not getting that, you know what I mean? Like the habits that we've all picked up and how we're not fully experiencing the stuff that in the way that we should.
And with Oppenheimer, I think that came out this summer. My friend, my roommates, everybody was saying, like, you have to go see this in the theater, like, just because the movie, like, the sound effects and how the magnitude of it. So I made sure to go in and watch that because I didn't want to miss out that saying that I watch Oppenheimer in the theater. To watch it in your living room, which I'm not sure if it's out yet.
Or like,
on streaming, wouldn't be the same.
Christopher Nolan seeing someone watch Dunkirk on a fucking
iPad,
pardon my language, 3-inch screen with like $4 headphones, Walgreens headphones on an airplane.
I watched it on kind of like a long flight, but it was like a terrible tiny screen.
Oh, the airplane. No,
like I totally I bastardized that movie.
That's a really interesting way of putting that. And maybe even showcasing somebody watching like Dunkirk or Oppenheimer on an airplane. Like, that would be awful. Like, that's meant for shitty rom-coms. Like,
yeah, totally. It's ruining ruining these pieces of art.
So I think, what's the best way for people to look at all the work that you guys have done? Your personal sites or is the Quality Meets creative.com? Is that where they can find us? Yep.
Or the Instagrams at Quality Meets Creative, either all those, all of these.
I think everybody should do that. I'll put that in the upfront too, to make sure that, you know, watch these to get the context because it's super important.
Yeah.
And only, I want to know about the agency culture. You said you guys are a little bit more remote. You guys are remote. You guys are predominantly the creative leads, new business leads. I want to know about the culture, who you're hiring, how you get to make small agency of the year by Ad Age. So what goes into that? Like, who do you got? What's the vision?
Over the past year, we've staffed up a bit. You know, we're only 3 years old. We now have, I think, 10, including ourselves, 10 full-time employees. But, you know, it can flex from anywhere, including contract flexes up to 25 or something like that right now. Because the way we originated was the two of us, as well as our co-founder, who's a producer. And that concept was structuring us more like a production house, where
right.
the core of us, and based on the client's needs, or whatever, we kind of scale up accordingly, build like an agency of all-stars specific to that one project at hand, and tackle that, and it can scale up to whatever you need with our deep Rolodex of people that we've worked with over the years. In general, the concept, though, is, again, like eliminating that those layers and just being more of a senior leadership, senior roles, where mm-hmm. it establishes a bit more top-to-top relationships with clients. And
right.
making sure that
you got to have that consistency at the top. But I like that, like, if I'm a client and you guys are saying, we have the core team here, we know what you need, and then we also have a Rolodex that we can build up to scale up with the dream team, like you said, superstars that are bespoke to who what you need currently. So yeah. that makes
and
a
then,
lot.
And in general, it's more like what you see is what you get. You know, like on the real, everything on the real is stuff that we've made. It's not mm-hmm. made, like somebody who made it and then has since left and got promoted and went to
or in the larger agency holding model, like they can pull from different offices that are, have never, the who you're talking to never even worked on it. They pulled it from London, perhaps, or
yeah.
France, perhaps.
Or a bait and switch where it's like, hey, yo, let's win this business. And then bye-bye, here's a junior.
Yeah, pitch team. Yeah, the pitch team doesn't match.
Right.
Who's actually working on it day to day.
So that's not going to happen. So most of us are all, you know, pretty senior level, just because part of that, this virtual format, I do think it is, you know, as a junior or whatever starting, it is beneficial to be in an office in some respects.
Yeah.
So like for us, it's like, we're all a little bit more, have a little bit more entrepreneurial spirit, self-starter, can wear multiple hats kind of thing and operate.
You have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. But we've tried to build a culture that there's still a culture because it's, mm-hmm. Brian and I hang out on one of these at Google Meet every day. Every day when we start.
You use Google Meet?
Yeah. Love a Google Meet.
Nobody uses Google Meet. Every time I'm on a call, they're like, oh, like I've never been on this before.
Pro Google Meet. That's our jam.
Pro Google. Like this is, I'm not sponsored yet, but I like a Google slide. I'm not supposed to use Google Slides.
Solid slides.
Word Google.
Great doc. Great doc.
Great doc.
For sure. All day.
Google
it's
Chrome.
So, it's so easy. Yeah.
Word Googles. Yeah. Word Googles for sure.
Okay. You have an iPhone?
Yeah.
Ryan, you got an iPhone?
Yes.
Google.
Need to switch that soon. But so
what'd you say?
When it's been.
No.
What was I saying? Oh yeah. So
culture.
Hang out with Google Meet. Well, every day we sign on, we start, and we hop in. Brian and I are in here until we end our day. And whether if we're
the cameras on the whole day?
All day. Every day. If we're in a meeting, we hop to another meeting, but we always bounce back here. And even on our website, if you go to under contact mm-hmm. on our website, it says, hey, drop us a note here or pop into our virtual office here. It would
no way.
It would
It
would take you to our office where we're paying.
Do you have the record button on yours?
We have the ability to record on ours right now.
You can record some of the stuff. No, well, this one's mine. This is
right.
All
yeah.
you want.
This is
should record people just coming in, poking in. That's a good idea, though. I like that idea.
It's really like trying to like some random person trying to order something like food.
I think most people get into it, they click it and then they quickly get intimidated and leave.
So you actually have it open all day?
Yeah.
We're sitting in there together, kind of just breathing on each other while working, if we're not in another meeting.
You might get some aspiring advertisers that pop in.
That's happened.
We like it. We embrace that.
And kick them out.
Totally. They ring the doorbell, come on in. We say we're very transparent and we applaud you coming by. And, you know,
Scram, we're busy, you could say sometimes.
Yeah, totally. Hit us up with your email, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But in general, even like after a meeting with our internal team, whatever, and we have a meeting with a client, we all regroup in our office, hop back on in the office. So there is a little bit of a culture where there's just an open door policy where we can just kind of hang out in our virtual office.
I've never heard any agency leaders doing this. So that's really, I think that's really awesome.
Yeah. And we're going to be building that out more too. Like right now, our managing director and head of strategy, they're hanging out in their own kind of Google office. And
started that recently.
Another team, our team of creative directors are hanging out in their office. And this is all like anyone in the company can kind of just come and pop into these places. And ideally, it's just like a little kind of virtual office. You could poke around in and hop into different off people's offices or lobby kind of thing.
If we're going to build out a map and like, oh, I want to hang out in the conference or whatever, just like these stupid little virtual offices that you will hop in and out of.
If I hopped in there, let's say I'm an aspiring advertiser and I'm hopping into your virtual office hour right now. And I'm saying, Brian Gordy, I'm a junior, senior, or recent graduate at an undergraduate institution. I'm looking for my first internship or my first job. I love what you guys do. I did my homework. I listened to the podcast. Gino did a great job managing both of you at the same time. He doesn't usually do that. They gas me up. They gas you guys up. And they say, what advice do you have for me? I have a portfolio. It's decent. I'll let you guys kind of handle that. We can kind of do a live rehearsal of that. What would you say?
Depending on how much time we had, like in that you might say like, hey, great to meet you. Sent, can you, do you how mind much? Emailing us your portfolio and we'll take
how a much game. Time 3 hours? You're saying
you have 10 minutes, 15 okay. minutes.
Yeah. Let's. Oh yeah. Yeah.
No, but I meant like when someone popped into the office, depending on, well, we've got a meeting in 5 minutes, like can't really chat right now versus like, oh, hey, you know, tell us happy to give you advice or to look at your work. We're always open to doing that and giving our transparent take, because I think that culturally, that's the other thing that we kind of pride ourselves on and trying to create an environment that's like fully honest and transparent and blunt to the point of bluntness. But like an environment where everyone could just kind of say what's on their minds at all times and feel okay about that, you know?
I know that you guys, you mentioned it before, you have that senior core team. You need that at this, where you guys are at in the agency span. You need people that can do a lot of stuff, have experience, can be virtual. What if somebody was like, I'll work for free or an intern whenever you need me as a copywriter, art director? Would you entertain that type of extra help or like some social briefs or whatever it might be?
Yeah. I mean, and we work with some more junior teams, creators as contract hires. Yeah. We like bringing them on, you know, like filling in, stepping in and helping us flesh things out. Think of like kind of to your point, social tactical ideas like that and kind of throwing out ideas. Sometimes as far as like the mentorship, it's harder just to find the amount of time for that. But like we're all for it. And I think they learn a different way of scrapping working, you know?
Sometimes a mentorship, they just need to do stuff. Like if you give them a small contract, to me, that's almost better than going back and forth and talking about theory for 2 hours a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think visibility is nice with that too. And even just like seeing how we do it and how other people of the team do it. Like, I think there's value in that. Cause me as a junior, I had another team that I looked up to and kind of saw how they worked as a team. And that kind of set the bar for both Gordy and I, cause they kind of paired us up or matched us up together. But we looked to them kind of as a model of how to be and how even to work together as a team.
Yeah.
And that's always good to see.
Yeah. But even if they were do one small project for you guys, whatever contract, then you can maybe point them in the right direction potentially.
For sure.
To another agency or to somebody that you know is doing cool stuff that can adopt basically that that student in their system.
And yeah. And sometimes they throw in ideas that you're like, oh shit, that's great. And it makes the meeting.
Yes.
You know, like it's, and that's exciting too.
Yeah. Maybe some more opportunities from there.
Totally.
Yeah.
Honestly, like I think in general, the way we've grown, the best way that we've figured it out, our people who've reached out to us, like our first hire, Jamie Stark, amazing creative director, she found us and reached out, and we appreciated that. Like, again, like this is that mindset of like self-starting, finding what you like and finding us. And then kind of like we had a bit more of a try before you buy kind of thing where we were able to work with her. And then we're like, holy shit, she's amazing. We need to hire this person. So like it's good to be proactive in that sense.
That's just good general advice for everybody listening. Like, do your homework, prove to them why you like the stuff that they're making, show that you can potentially do it, and maybe try an internship or try a quick project that gets your foot in the door for sure. I think that's just mental great advice.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we've operated our whole careers. Mm-hmm. Find the people who are doing the work that you want to be doing, mm-hmm. align with those people, and then do whatever it takes to kind of learn from them and kind of prove yourself to them.
Annoy them until they allow you to do it too. Like that's, it took me, I started on customer specific marketing, making coupon code things that the garbage and newspaper that people throw away. That's where I started, and then had to scratch and claw my way to general above.
Which is permanent.
I started at Draft Worldwide on Kellogg's CSM. So, which was
that Publicis owned?
This was, I don't even know what it was, but it was before they merged with Draft FCB.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Kellogg's Wobblers and Coupons. And then they merged Draft FCB and that. And then you're like in the building with, oh, they're doing the above the line stuff. And then I started to be in that.
Do you have a portfolio or like proof of work, or they just hired you to do the.
I had like a little bit of a bad design background. Not good. And so I didn't do the traditional portfolio school. Had the bad and just kind of made my way there, and then just annoyed people until they gave me a brief. And then they did. And then I was like proactively brought them work, and they're like, oh, this is good. Let's bring you in here. And then we paired us up with me up with Brian. I'm in an interview right now. I know, it's really good.
Very cute. Brian, how about you? How'd you break in?
I started as an account guy, and I was probably like the world's worst account person, and I hated it. To me, it was like soul crushing because I
hear so many people say they want to do account. I'm like, are you?
I was just specifically bad at it, I think, but I kind of failed. Up. I think at the time there was like maybe just the lack of guys on the account side. And so just the fact that I was a guy at the time, like they wanted to, you know, put me on more and more teams and kept promoting me. So I was working on my portfolio on the side just because I was more interested in switching to creative. Did like a night course kind of thing where I just like put work up on a wall, and then people at like Leo just like told me why it sucked.
Yeah.
And that was how I built the portfolio. And then
you were working on the side, knowing that you want to be a creative, but you still maintain that account.
Yeah. 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 Right.
Yeah.
Leading the other life at nights, trying to put together the book, and then got hired as a junior copywriter, kind of took a, you know, cut whatever from like senior account executive or whatever to junior copywriter at FCB. And then, you know, kind of had worked through a couple different partners at FCB, again, kind of found the people that I thought was doing the best stuff and trying to align myself with them. And Gordy kind of came at this one senior team that we had both been working with. We came at them from like separate sides, and they kind of put us together. And then once we started working together, things just clicked and took off.
And that was like 15 years
17, yeah, something like that.
And then FCB was the big agency you guys were at for a while, or did you?
Yeah,
you hopped around.
FCB is where we met, and then we went to LA with our respective families, worked Deutsch LA on PlayStation, Taco Bell, some other things.
Clients, great clients, yeah.
And then we came back to Chicago to work at Leo Burnett for about 6 years or something like that. And then we were laid off in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started freelancing for our first time. We were usually just these loyal company guys. And then we started freelancing, doing that dance for a bit. And that was nice, you know, liberating to shed the bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. But we yearned to be closer to the work, decide what made the room, have the conversations, and make ultimately see through the work. And that was where the concept of quality meets was kind of born.
Yeah.
It was kind of history.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, I got no other questions other than how could people reach out to you guys? And we kind of already covered that with the pop-in. Is that, unless you guys have a better route?
Pop-in is direct access. Easiest way, direct access. Obviously,
don't pop in unless you got something good to say.
Yeah, totally. No. Yeah. Please, like, don't just, like, we don't need chat roulette situations going on, but.
I think Omegle shut down.
Was that still, that was a thing?
That was a thing, yeah. Not that I know about that, but then, so the pop in or probably the info at qualitymeetscreative.com.
Yeah. Or Gordy or Brian at qualitymeetscreative.com.
I give them the tools and they can do whatever they want with it if they choose.
Yeah.
There's nothing else. I can't force them to talk to you guys. I could also make intros for people listening if they're nervous. I could be like that filter, like, let me actually see. I could make a personal intro if they're really good. I always say that in the intro of this recording. I'm happy to do that for people that might be intimidated. But if you're intimidated, Gordy might not like you because he likes people that are persistent and know what they want. So keep that in mind as well. Cool, dudes. Anything else you guys want to talk about? I think we covered it all. It was good app.
Yeah, that's it.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys.
This was great.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. And I'm excited to see what you guys do in the future. And we'll have to hang out a little bit while you guys are... While Gordy's still in Chicago, he's going to Denver.
He's cool. Free February. Let's make it happen.
Cool, man. All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you.